Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, you think we're going to become a lost civilization? We're certainly worried about that. All of us are seeing signs of trouble ahead. And maybe we will win. And maybe we'll be one of those civilizations. Well, maybe, I don't know if there are any civilizations that haven't been lost in the past, because we're here now. And there are remnants of many of them. And there are also many that haven't yet been discovered. For good reason. Maybe they have been discovered, and we're not supposed to know. Because there's an incredible book about all this. And it's called Lost Civilizations: The Secret Histories and Suppressed Technologies of the Ancients. Wow, this is an amazing book. I'm so fascinated by it. And it's so much information. It's a big, thick book because it has so many details of the past. And the guy who compiled this, along with a previous book called Hidden History. So our author is a man who's been on the show a number of times before. I love talking with him. And we will find out all about this. Jim Willis, welcome back to Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter. Great to be with you, as always.
Well, I'm amazed at your dexterity, because we've talked about other things in previous shows, about your own journey in consciousness and in astral travel, all kinds of things. But this is much more didactic in its academic way, because you've really gone into deep details of history to understand what we're dealing with.
Yeah, it's been a journey. It really has. Along the way, I've come across people who don't want to get involved with it. Who have said, you know, what is history? What's the importance of history to me? I've got my own problems right now, especially in today's world with all the stuff that's going on. And my answer for them is, I'm always tempted just to use a platitude, like those who forget history are destined to repeat it. But those kinds of sayings are there, I think, for a reason, because they're true over and over again. Let me just give you one example of why the study of previous and lost civilizations is so important. In 1783, now, we have to remember, this is only a decade or so after the American Revolution, after the American experiment began. 1783, Edward Gibbons wrote a book called The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. Now, that's a book that used to be on the shelf of every educated person in the world. Edward Gibbon was a great historian. And through a tremendous analysis, he wanted to find out why the Roman Empire fell apart. What happened to it? At one time, this was an empire that stretched from Ireland all the way through to the right up until the borders of Asia and China and all that. It was just a huge empire, and he wanted to know what made it fall. And in his study, he came up with five reasons why the Roman Empire decayed and fell apart. And I'd like to share those five reasons with you.
And I'm sure they're very relevant today.
I'm wondering, as I share these, if anybody turned in late and didn't realize I'm talking about the Roman Empire, I wonder if he thinks we're talking about America of this century. He said the number one reason, and I'm always amazed whenever I reread these, the number one reason that the decline and fall of the Roman Empire came about was because sports and entertainment received more and more money while the plight of the poor was neglected. We all know about the Roman Colosseum and the sports and the things that went on there, the gladiators and all that, but it became so important to watch these spectacles that they put more and more money into these spectacles while the poor were neglected in Rome and throughout the empire. Second reason the Roman Empire fell apart was because money, a disproportionate amount of money went to the military rather than to the public good. And the third reason, he said, was that violence in both games and in public life became more and more accepted and prevalent. The fourth reason was because people's faith in the government was undermined, and Gibbon said, justly so. And the fifth reason was that religions, which had kept the Roman Empire together, grew fragmented and became a cause of dissension rather than unity. Now remember, he wrote those words in 1783, and I swear he could be talking about modern civilizations today. It's just, I find it absolutely amazing.
And it's so fascinating to me, and especially, now, I was just thinking about the last one you said, and how the Christian evangelicals in this country, you would think would follow the teachings of Jesus, and they don't. They're, you know, it's amazing how,
you know,
I don't know what to say, but.
It's funny. My daughter and I, of course, Christianity was my home. I haven't been in the church for 10 years, but I was a Christian minister for 40 years. And my daughter and I were watching an interview yesterday with one of my favorite characters in the gospel scene. His name is Mark Lowry. And for years, he sang with the Bill Gaither Vocal Band. And Mark Lowry was born and raised in an independent fundamentalist Baptist church. And he is an extremely funny guy. But one of the reasons he said he got so concerned about what they were doing, he said, people would come to our meetings, and I wasn't sure, our concerts, and I wasn't sure if we wanted to make them into Christians or Republicans. I thought that was, the politics has just become so immersed in Christianity. And it's not just Christianity. Go to Israel, and you'll find the politics just are right through Judaism, and then turn to Islam, and Islam is, of course, blatantly political, and all of these.
Let's call it extremist.
Yeah, and they tend to establish a base and just take over, and that's what happened in Rome. Where, you know, religions just became a cause of dissension rather than unity. The whole idea of Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, in Buddhism and Hinduism, you find the same things repeated over and over again. Love your neighbor, forgive your neighbor, do what's right. The golden rule is repeated over and over again. More and more, religion has moved away from that and turned into a theater for political.
Well, it's become very tribal.
Oh, yeah.
Tribalism is really not a high level of
consciousness.
You know, being collective is really what we want.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I talk to people about this, and I ask them about this, and I've talked to quite a few people and corresponded with quite a few people saying, why aren't people interested in history? Why aren't people interested in finding out the frailties of previous civilizations? Because then we can relate those to our own, see if we're going down that same path. And I've asked people this question. I've asked people this question over and over again. And basically I get variations on three main themes. And they surprise me. They really do. Number one, people don't pay attention to this stuff because, quite frankly, our technology has grown and evolved faster than our morality and the ethics needed to control that technology. Technology has shortened our attention span. There's no question about that. I used to read, I can find it in myself. I'm not just criticizing other people. I'm thinking about it myself. I used to read 3 or 4 books a week regularly. Now, maybe one, you know, that kind of thing.
But it's not, let me just interrupt. I'm sorry, but it's not that you're not reading the books as much as you're not educating yourself.
That's it. There's a difference between reading about something and reading something. If you want to find out, for instance, I'm amazed at the number of people who are fascinated by stories about Atlantis, but they have never read Plato to find out what Plato said about it. He's our only guide. I mean, he was the one from where it all came. And people who have heard, people hear all these stories about Atlantis, but they've never read Plato to find out what a living, breathing philosopher called Plato actually said about it.
And how
I know in my own life, I find myself, whereas I used to sit down and read a book where I would catch all the nuances and all the other things, now I sit down and turn on the television. Our attention span is getting shorter. People want their wisdom now their knowledge now in small sound bites. They want something they can easily handle and something that comes in, I don't know how many characters Facebook or Twitter or whatever it is allows, but they want their information. If it's too much, they don't do it. I ask people this sometimes, when you're going to look at Facebook, what's the first thing that you look at about deciding whether to watch this video or not? And they say the title. And I say, what's the second thing? And they say the length. Right. If it's over 8 or 9 minutes, they're just not interested.
Also why I do half hour radio show.
That's probably a very good idea.
Right.
But there's another reason too. That was the first reason that technology is shortening our attention span. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. Don't get me wrong. I couldn't write without a computer. I couldn't talk to you without a computer, without technology. I love it. But on the other hand, we are paying a price for it. And I'm not saying we have to change anything necessarily, but we have to be aware of it. Otherwise, we just keep paying the price. The second big reason, though, that I'm discovering about this is a little more personal. New York Times had an article just a couple of days ago that talked about the sickness of selfishness. We are becoming a people who are more and more self-centered. More and more about me as an individual.
But it's not just about me. It's about what me wants.
That's a good way of saying it. I got a real kick out of this. This was brought into focus so beautifully for me. A couple of days ago, I was watching those terrible scenes coming out of Portland when there were fires and there was the tear gas and the pepper sprays and the protesters and the troops there in camouflage clothing coming, and there were fires burning in the background and everything else. And I was really involved in watching what was happening there when all of a sudden came time for a commercial. And here was this woman on the commercial who was as happy as could be because she just found a new skin lotion that was perfect for her skin and it made her feel so much better. And
I what looked a contrast.
I looked at those and the contrast, why I felt like I you talk about a schizophrenic type crack up with two totally different personalities. How can we as a society go back and forth between here's all of this terrible stuff happening and then, oh, eat this or get this or do this and you'll be deliriously happy? It's too much for the average person to take. My wife and I were talking about early television. I mean, we're both 75 years old. So we remember the old days of when television first came on, when the Lone Ranger and Roy Rogers and all our favorites.
I remember all that. I'm even older than you.
Yeah, the Lone Ranger never shot anybody. He just shot the gun out of his hand, you know, or that kind of thing. We realized that tonight, while we're watching television, we can see more murder and mayhem in 2 or 3 hours of television in a watching NCIS or watching these cop shows or these mysteries, you know, we can see more murder and mayhem in a couple of hours in the evening than we saw probably in the first 15, 20 years of our life.
Well, this says a lot.
Yeah.
Because
we just get,
it really says
get
something
used to it.
About where is society going? What can't we handle about creating peace And yep. what can't we handle about slowing down and really getting deeper into meaning?
Yeah, that leads perfectly to the third point I had about why people are not interested in studying this in the past. And that's that today, I think we have, and I'm not speaking for myself here, I think we have somehow lost the wisdom that you can only get from elders. And we have replaced it with knowledge of with people who are up on the latest technology stuff. I mean, this is definitely a youth culture we live in now, much more than it used to be. People have replaced knowing knowing with knowing about. We touched on this earlier. It's the difference between knowledge versus wisdom. There's a difference between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge tells you how to do something. Wisdom makes you ask the question, should you do it? For years, for instance, starting even back in the 70s and the 80s, we knew we were despoiling the oceans. We knew we were filling them with junk. When Thor Heyerdahl made his version, the Kon-Tiki version, but the Ra voyages, when he sailed from the Mediterranean to America, across the Atlantic, and he remarked on the fact that there wasn't one single day in the voyage when they couldn't look overboard and see plastic floating on the ocean. And this was how long ago? 30 years ago, probably, maybe more. I have to look up the dates now. We knew we were doing this.
And the Pacific has it even worse.
And the Pacific is even worse now, right? Well, we can say the same thing about we knew what we were doing to the environment. We knew that there has to be limits to growth. You just can't base a culture upon growing.
But there's competition about fixing it. You know, there are a lot of people who want to fix it, but they have to compete with the people who don't care.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they have more power.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are more of them. And probably you put all of these together, our shortened attention span and that that me generation, and then wanting to know, wanting to have more to do with knowledge than wisdom. You can have a lot of very smart people who have not yet attained wisdom. And I think, frankly, if you want to make this very practical, let's look at the leaders of the technology revolution, going back to Bill Gates, going back to Mark Zuckerberg and all of the rest. They established these huge platforms, these powerful platforms, when they were very young. They had the knowledge to do that. And I think that's wonderful. But they hadn't yet attained the wisdom. They ran right into the economic world, and they started making all this money, and they made the great leap forward, and they had overnight success, fantastic success, but they hadn't yet lived enough years to garner the wisdom that comes from trying this and failing and seeing what happens when you do this and that. That's why I think one of the most important things we have to do in this society is recapture the idea of the elder, the one who has the wisdom.
Yes, but also the word integrity is lost. And I think that's a big player in the future, has to be integrity.
Well, I think integrity is a product of wisdom, not knowledge.
Right.
You can use knowledge in a lot of ways where you just bypass integrity. But integrity is something totally different. You can only develop that after years of seeing what happens. And that's where I think the wisdom of the elder comes in so much.
I always like to refer to the Mayan calendar and their mapping of civilizations over the last 5,000 years. And they've seen patterns of flow. They're in 360-year segments.
Yes.
Where empires have grown over a 360-year period and then self-destruct, and then you have to go through another 360 years before new empires start growing again.
Yeah.
And their mapping actually brings us to this moment in time that we're in, where the last 360 years of empire building self-destructs, and we're in that time now.
Yeah. Think about this in terms of let's go back way back in human history. Let's go back to the times when people's entertainment at night after the day's activities were over consisted of sitting around a campfire and listening to elders tell stories. Now, some of these stories were fantastic, some were entertaining, some were filled with knowledge.
It's amazing the history many elders have had.
Yeah. And they would hear who they were. They would hear their history based on the wisdom of people who had lived it and who had heard the stories and everything else. Now, how do we get our entertainment? Well, we send the kids off to watch TV. We used to send them off to read books, or we used to read books. We don't even do that anymore. When I was on my bicycle trip cross country, I made a couple of them now from the West Coast to the East Coast. And I was amazed when I first started to notice that something was missing. And when I went through all these small towns, now this was back in the 70s, so there were still some small towns on the back roads. And I wondered what was missing. And then all of a sudden it hit me. Nobody builds a house with a front porch anymore. People don't sit out on the front porch and talk in the evening. Yeah. They go to their own places, and the kids have a TV because they want to watch what they want to watch, and the adults have a TV because they want to watch what they want to watch, and they just don't mix anymore. And after a while, the kids began to rebel, and the elders began to rebel. And granted, they've always done this, but I think the classic example of this is to go back to that wonderful show that we had back in the 70s. Remember All in the Family, when Archie Bunker and Meathead they're arguing with each other, but at least they were talking to each other. We don't even hardly do that anymore.
Amazing. I remember my grandparents lived in the Bronx, and they never had a TV, of course, and I don't even know if they had a radio, but they would sit.
They sat down on the stoop in front and talked.
They lived in an apartment house.
Oh, really? Yeah.
On the second or third floor. And they had a window that looked out on the street, looking at the shops and all that. It was a side street. And they just sat there. And anytime you go to visit them, you'd always see them in the window looking at all the people. That's how they pass their time. It's like being on a front porch.
Yeah. Some of the greatest memories of my childhood are sitting on the front porch with my parents, and people would walk by after dinner. And they would stop by, we'd say something, and they'd stop by, and maybe they'd come up and sit down, and my dad would always pour the coffee or something, and we'd sit and talk. And even as a kid, I used to love to just sit around and listen to these kinds of stories. Yeah. We just don't do that anymore. It's all look at a television, or instead of reading a good book, it used to go into people's houses. As a minister, I would visit houses all the time, and one of the things I would used to do would be to go in and when they sat me down there, I would always look around the room, see what books they had there. And you could always find Robert Louis Stevenson. You could always find the Bible. You could always find the classics. Most people just don't read the classics anymore. They just don't seem relevant. And yet that's where the wisdom is. Yeah. And in our society today, I'm really afraid that we have we're too far along the journey. I'm not sure there's anything bringing us back. And this,
I think, the young people today will bring us back, because I think they're learning from this lockdown and all of that.
I hope so. This might be a blessing in disguise.
Right.
What bothers me is that now that we're so unified, it's such a global community nowadays, that I wonder the things we do now affect global, global ramifications. And I sure hope we haven't gone too far, but I've seen civilizations in the past that they overgrazed, they used up their resources, and then plagues came. There used to be we talk about the Amazon, for instance, being a pristine wilderness. Uh-huh. Well, it isn't.
It's been destroyed.
A long time ago, 400 years ago, when the first Europeans made the trip down the Amazon River, they described thriving villages, thriving communities. But unfortunately, disease, European diseases got to these people who had no biological defense against them. And thousands, millions of people just got absolutely wiped out. The Amazon claimed its own, and it's only within the last 20 years that we are finally beginning to say, wait a minute, that wasn't a pristine forest. There's evidence of humans here. And we just forgot it because it was 100 years between the first time that Europeans came into touch with these people and the second time. And in that 100 years, we had destroyed totally a whole civilization through the pandemic.
So your book, Lost Civilizations, we're actually getting very close to the end of the show. Lost Civilizations is so much information. It's fascinating reading. And there's so much we need to do. We need to talk more, of course, because I want to get into how fantastic this book is. And people can find it, Lost Civilizations, The Secret Histories and Suppressed Technologies of the Ancients. Jim Willis is your name. And they can find you where?
Probably the easiest way is just go to my website, jimwillis.net. And it lists all my books and also has a contact page if people want to contact me. I'd love to hear from you. It lists all my books and all the things that are going on, all the activities that I've got going on. If you go to Facebook, as much as I said about Facebook, yes, I have a Facebook page too. It's at Facebook, it's jimwillis.author. And I really encourage people to go to my YouTube channel as well. Matter of fact, I'm hoping 13 people hear this and sign in, subscribe to my YouTube channel, because my daughter tells me if we get 13 more people, we've entered the next level, which will make the advertising so much easier.
Encourage that from our audience. Good. Now, this is wonderful talking with you, and always is. There's so much deep stuff that we still need to get into because it's endless.
Anytime, Peter. I love it. I love it. Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jim. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heart river.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.